Coming up on podcast 1352, Lucid's record-setting 70-mile-an-hour range test. We have a new range king in town. Stick around, I'll tell you more. Also on the show today, a big headline, Cybertruck photo is leaked, so we get a look at the latest version of that. We have a look at GM investing some megabucks in Michigan for EV production, and an exclusive report on Renault, Nissan and Mitsubishi unveiling some new platforms. Well, good morning, good afternoon or good evening, wherever you're listening around the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. It's Monday, 24th January. My name is Martin Lee, and I've been through every EV story, so you don't have to. Hey, by the way, thanks for checking out the new format show earlier today, on air for breakfast time US, lunchtime UK, just after lunch in Europe. It's EV News Briefly. It's your 5 to 8 minute introduction to the day's news. If you are stuffed for time, you might want to download that version instead. If you're literally just, I don't know, hopping in the car, you're going to be for 5 minutes, you want to know what's going on, you can download that every day. And then a few hours later, this extended version will come out on your podcast feed, on the Patreon feed, of course, which is ad-free for Patreon subscribers. And in time, hopefully by next week, we'll get this version online on YouTube as well. But for now, a return to YouTube after about a year. And, the interviews have been on there, but not The Daily Show. But at least EV News Briefly will be on there every day. Check out the YouTube channel. Just search YouTube for EV News Daily. About 6,500 subscribers on that channel. So it should pop up and you should be able to find me. And that'll be a little new regular thing if you want to watch rather than listen. Otherwise, this podcast remains. Thanks, Tyler, executive producer of this podcast, Tyler Voss. Now, thank you very much for signing up on Patreon. That is super kind of you. Thank you very much for increasing from a from producer to exec producer status, like $5 to $10, and that's real money out of your pocket. And I really, really appreciate every single Patreon supporter. Okay, so this is big news. Yesterday, then yesterday morning US time, my buddy Tom Mulogany finally dropped his Lucid Air range test video. This is the world's first range test of a Lucid Air. Dream Edition, of course, 520 of these vehicles will be made and have all sold out, by the way. And so Lucid were kind enough to say to Tom, hey, come and pick up a car anytime you want and come and range test it. And then Tom got COVID over Christmas and New Year. Now he's well, and he finally went to Arizona to go and test the Lucid Air Dream Edition. This was a car that had done 5,000 or 6,000 miles. This wasn't a car that they had prepped specifically, fresh out of the box, you know, oven fresh, not a single bit of degradation on the battery. So this should have a 118 kilowatt hour usable pack, probably a little bit of degradation after 6,000 miles. It's probably been a journalist, maybe a review car or a test car. So maybe it's been caned, I don't know, like round the track, DC fast charged. So they weren't trying to game the test. In fact, I think they did themselves a disservice. Now, like Tom and Kyle do as well, the 70-mile-an-hour range test has a few rules in place in terms of how you drive the car, the temperature setting inside, how fast the fans go. No using the massage seats, my friend, because that would use more energy. And also just trying to eliminate as many variables as you can. With a 70-mile-an-hour range test, you know, it's never going to be identical unless you literally take the same route on the same day with exactly the same cars, make sure that none of those cars get behind another car, because then you'd, I don't know, get some advantage or slipstreaming. Look, it's so impossible to do it in the lab, but these guys do an incredible job of just nailing the parameters of this. So Tom knew that when he took out the Lucid, it was going to beat the 310 miles of the previous range test winner, and that was the new 2021 Model 3. However, he didn't know how much it was going to beat it by. This Lucid had 19-inch aero wheels. I got to admit, not the prettiest wheels to put on the car rather than the 21s, but if you want the range, you've got to go for the 19s. It was in white. It's a good-looking car, by the way. EPA range, 520 miles. It's the five-stage EPA test, the five-cycle, I should guess, I should call it, really. That five-cycle test procedure to certify the range with the EPA, used by Tesla, also Audi, Polestar, Rivian use it as well. Other OEMs use the two cycle test, and it means that if you submit the five cycle test, you don't have to take off as much range. It kind of flatters the cars a little bit. I don't mean that in a bad way, but also it means that when you do a range test, often these cars won't hit the APA range on the highway. So 70 miles an hour. Look, you know, I know some people drive slower, some people drive faster. That's just the speed they picked and they started testing all those years ago. So it's 70 miles an hour. And the temperature was 51 degrees or 10.5 degrees Celsius. The consumption rate was, this is the big one, 4.3 miles per kilowatt hour. He drove this car, which is like 2.5 tons or whatever, like 5,500 pounds. At 70 miles an hour on the highway, it did 4.3 miles per kilowatt hour. It's ridiculously efficient. He used 117 kilowatt hours of energy. The report in the car in terms of how much energy he has used is the total energy. So the everyone's, you know, there's two ways of doing it. You either report what the motors have used to move the car forwards, or you report on the dashboard the total energy taken. So not only the motors, but all of the ancillary systems as well. Now, Lucid does total energy from the battery. So Tom also drove it for a little while, a couple of miles on 117 kilowatt hour. So he has a feeling it was going to tick over to 118. But anyway, either way, it was about 6 miles he drove it after the display said 0%. And then he could feel that the throttle pedal was becoming unresponsive. And he decided to stop the test there and then go into Electrify America Charger, which he was next to, and plug it in. Hey, so you just want to know the number, right? If you haven't heard it already, the number is 500 miles. It was just a smidge over 500, like 500.1 or something. Like a 500 mile real world highway speed car is now on sale. I mean, that's just amazing. Like what we want for EVs to just smash any kind of preconceptions that EVs can't go very far. They're all milk floats. Now, obviously, Tom couldn't mash the accelerator, couldn't have any fun in it, was just sat there on cruise control because it had a slightly different software version than the early buyers. All the cars leaving Lucid now, by the way, all the cars leaving the factory have the latest software, have the cruise control enabled and the some of the driver assist functions, which the early cars really didn't. So it did have that, which is good, because so Tom was able to maintain speed. He needed to set the speedo to 71 mile an hour, I think, to match GPS 70. Either way, he drove this car for over 7 hours straight to drain the battery, which is just incredible. 500 miles real world is just not only beating the previous record holder, but just utterly destroying it. And that is amazing. Now, it forms part of our question of the week this week. So keep listening to the end of the podcast. I'll let you know what the question is. You can get interactive and get your answer read out on Sunday. Do we even need 500 miles? Look, it's not about whether you need 500 miles on a reasonably cool day on the flat, as it were, very little elevation. But, you know, do you need range if you're going to start towing? Absolutely. If you're going to be in very cold, you know, minus figures, absolutely. If you're going to do a lot of elevation, do you need the range? Yes, completely. That way, if you want to do 200-300 miles with no concerns, or you're going into an area with very little charging infrastructure, that's why you need the big number. Also a big battery. Now, it's not like they've chucked the 200 kilowatt hour pack in like the Hummer has. 117/18 kilowatt hours usable, which is bigger than an equivalent Tesla Model S, which is probably the non-plaid version. It's simply called Model S these days, or new Model S if you want. That is probably the car we should be comparing this to, not the Model 3, because it's a much more similar car. I'd love to know your thoughts on that number. 500 miles, holy bazookas, it's amazing. I'll pop a link to Inside EV so you can check out that video. It's online right now. Next, huge photo released today. I say released because it must have been. It's a couple of days now before Tesla's Q4 earnings call. Now, all the websites that printed this said a Cybertruck photo has been leaked. Now, hey, call me cynical. I did work in the media for over 20 years. Photos don't just leak 2 days before earnings to start drip of information. And this photo comes out. It's in excellent resolution. Apparently it was leaked. Somebody got into the design studio and took this photo. These accidents don't happen. Like, that vehicle's locked down when it needs to be. And when it doesn't need to be locked down, photos leak. They leak to the forums or the media, or an anonymous person takes it. So, hey, I'm saying the Cybertruck photos were published, because that's just the way car companies and the media all kind of work together. Hey, I'm calling it. If you really think this was a leak, then, you know, you and I can disagree. It looks pretty much like the Cybertruck. Some people saying online the front has been shortened. I don't see that. I think it's just a different angle of the lens, or the fisheye lens kind of thing, or whatever, from the original reveal. all those years ago, the wiper has been added. It now has a windscreen wiper. It is stored vertically, in other words, not horizontally, flat, under the hood, where a lot of wipers are, but it's in its kind of resting position. It does rest vertically. It's not aesthetically pleasing. I'm sure they'll find a better... They have to find a better solution. It's ugly as hell. And it's huge, because the Cybertruck glass is huge. So, and they say it's an extender. It's an extender! Partridge reference. They have to make a change to this, because it's horrible and ugly and nasty. This isn't, I'm sure, not a pre-production or release car. They'll find something with that wiper to make it look a little bit better. It's running on different wheels, which I've never seen before. Looks like Model 3 wheels with the aero covers taken off. The best design, the best way I can describe it to you. No door handles, which is what was the big rumour was. So they say that the car will, as you walk up to it, present itself. Okay, well, there'll be some sort of manual release. Of course, there's the cameras all around it to see who's walking up to it. I don't think it's facial recognition like you get on the new Genesis car, for instance, that does scan your face as you're walking up to it, and that is replacing the key, etc., or a digital key, but still, we'll find out. I couldn't see the charge port on the back from the angle that we saw, but otherwise, you couldn't tell much from it. It looks very much like the Cybertruck, the alpha release that we've seen before, that was on display at the Peterson, wasn't it? And then, I don't know, we'll wait and see more. I mean, we'll get to find out more in 2 days' time when Elon Musk rejoins the earnings call, and I'm sure we'll find out some more details then. If it was a leak, enormously coincidental timing, by the way. Tesla's gross margin is going to be the focus with the Q4 earnings, according to Business Insider, and how well they manage the costs amid supply headwinds, and whether they can be on track to deliver a 40% long-term gross margin. Now, they're at about 28% automotive gross margin at the moment. They're about 26% gross margin Q2 last year. The CFO, Zach Kirkhorn, telling investors last time out that there's an awakening for electric vehicles and that they don't have the stock to supply the demand that's out there. They're selling as many cars as they can make, as is the case with pretty much all EVs. And a final report today from Nikkei Asia, no more than a one-liner really, that Panasonic confirming they'll start mass production of Tesla's new lithium-ion batteries, the 4680s, the so-called 4680 cells coming out of... Well, Tesla are going to make their own ones in, you know, Berlin and Austin and Shanghai, but also Panasonic will make them as well in 2023, that report being confirmed. I'll do one more Tesla story as I got time. Last year, Tesla factories were producing a lot of cars, particularly in Fremont in California, producing an average of 8,550 cars a week. So about 1,500 shy of the kind of psychological barrier of 10,000 cars every single week. Tesla in Fremont in California, 8,550 compares very favorably with Toyota in Georgetown, Kentucky, which is 8,427. So more than Toyota, more than BMW at South Carolina. They did 8,343. Certainly more than Ford in Dearborn, Michigan, which was making about 5,500 vehicles a week. Bloomberg have done a brilliant analysis of production data from 70 manufacturing sites. Now, Tesla's Fremont factory, they say, is a scrappy thing to behold. It's not particularly pretty when they see these drone videos go over Fremont. A bit of a Frankenstein's monster of a car factory. Originally built by GM in the 1960s, then it was the GM and Toyota plant until the bankruptcy in 2009. Then it was Tesla. They've kind of bolted things on as they need to and tents out the back to build cars in. For all of the growth and dominance in EVs, Tesla is now the 10th biggest auto manufacturer in North America. Of course, just with one main place to make cars at the moment till Austin's up and running. But still, what is making cars for them is doing really, really well. So a ton of stuff coming out of Fremont. 8,500 cars every single week. But then when you look at the designs, they're very critical, Business Insider. Sorry, this one was a Bloomberg article of Fremont and how it's kind of expanded in a kind of an ugly way. But then you look at Shanghai, everything they've learned got poured into that. Look at Berlin, everything they've learned got poured into that. Look at Austin, everything they learned got poured into that. And so those facilities, you know, when you look at the sky shots, the drone shots, just night and day from where they were. So really fantastic next generation facilities. Right, coming up very soon, we'll talk about the new platforms from Renault, Nissan and Mitsubishi, and solid state battery cells from Dongfeng. That's on the way. Stick around. Now, let's talk about how GM will invest $6.5 billion in Michigan for their EV production. A story from just at the end of last week that I just missed. General Motors are going to detail plans tomorrow, according to this rumor, for their $6.5 billion investment in two Michigan sites. As part of that investment, they'll make 4,000 jobs created in the state. This is according to a meeting agenda. Now, this meeting agenda seems to have been leaked, or again, things get leaked to the media. It means coverage beforehand and then coverage when it actually gets announced. Double bubble. Funny how that works, isn't it, with media coverage? Politics do it all the time. So this plan is spending $6.5 billion and those 4,000 jobs created. The automaker will announce its investment at an event in Lansing. And the news comes a day before the governor, Gretchen Whitmer, State of the State address, talking about the economic development efforts in the area. I'll pop a link to that story in the show notes if you'd like to read more. Now, an exclusive Reuters report into Renault, Nissan, Mitsubishi, of course, the alliance, planning to triple their investment and develop EVs jointly. Yeah, obviously, that shouldn't even be news, but it will be on Thursday by the look of it, with a plan to invest more than 20 billion euros, $23 billion, over 5 years on EV development. And by the end of the decade, expected to come up with 30 new battery EVs. The fact that they weren't before now making EVs on all the same platforms is kind of crazy. Renault and Nissan had such an early lead in EVs. Nissan with the Leaf and Carlos Ghosn, a huge proponent of that. And then, of course, the Renault Zoe onto its third iteration now and still going strong in many markets. I've owned, you know, as I say all the time, I've owned two of them. I love the little Renault Zoe. And then they lost their way. What next for Nissan? The Ariya, which is still months away. What next for Renault? The Megane. But that should have been on the market years ago. They had such an early lead. And again, with the politics of the various shareholdings in that company, in terms of Renault owned a bit of Nissan, Nissan owned a bit of Renault, but it wasn't equitable. In other words, the French, because the French government, aka Renault, owning more of Nissan than Nissan owned of Renault. And then the whole idea of a complete takeover, Carlos Ghosn getting ousted, the crazy escape that he had to make. And the whole thing is just a mess. An early lead blown. I love the companies. I wish them all the very best. But it's just obvious. They've got three platforms they'll jointly develop. One underpins the new Ariya and the new Megane sitting on the same platform and supports no-frills cars from the likes of Nissan and their China market partner, Dongfeng. Things like Renault's Dacia brand will sit on this new platform as well. And some micro mini platforms that'll be useful for Japan. And, you know, things like the Nissan Micra, for instance. It's got to go electric one day. All cars will. And that's how they'll do it. They will use common batteries and key components, and they'll jointly invest in the capacity in France, Britain, and China, adding 220 gigawatt hours of battery cell production by the end of the decade. And I'll pop a link to that exclusive report in Reuters so you can read more. Now, let's talk solid-state batteries. And this was a report coming out just over the weekend. I think it was on Saturday this came out. Dongfeng announced the delivery of their first 50 pure electric vehicles. It's called the E70. And what's interesting about this solid-state battery pack and a battery-swappable solid-state battery pack? Well, conventional lithium-ion batteries used in everything from laptops to electric vehicles have a liquid electrolyte. Now, that electrolyte exists between the positive and the negative, the cathode, the positive, and the negative, the anode. And the electrolyte serves as a medium where the ions move between the cathode and anode. And that can be troublesome sometimes in terms of lithium-ion battery technology. This is where solid-state batteries promise a huge change. The electrolyte is a solid. And actually, when people talk about solid-state batteries, increasingly, they're kind of wrapping in semi-solid materials. They kind of call them hybrid solid-state. They get called solid-state, but they're like a hybrid solution. But either way, the electrolyte can be like a glass, a ceramic, any other solid material, according to carnewschina.com. They say the problem with this technology is it's still experimental, and no automaker has got to mass production with this technology. NIO say they will unveil it later this year. Toyota, Volkswagen say they will unveil it in 2025. Mercedes, BMW, Renault saying they will unveil their technology by the end of the decade. But the Chinese and Dongfeng getting there first and getting those 50 cars on the road. And we'll wait and see how they perform, and hopefully that technology can scale as well. Oh, by the way, why do we want that solid electrolyte? Well, the batteries can charge quicker. They're far more stable, so that if they are punctured, an accident, they're shot, there's no chance of a thermal runaway. They can also have higher performance as well, and you can end up having a much smaller battery to achieve the same range as a lithium-ion battery at the moment, and therefore that saves weight. They're also easier to assemble. Obviously not easier at the minute because they are in development, but there are fewer stages of production, and that would eventually lead to far lower costs, and therefore that's what will probably mean that by the end of the decade we do see those small entry-level, you know, segment cars, like I mentioned, the Nissan Micra, those little city cars that are able to go electric with a decent amount of range with this new technology. But look, we don't need solid-state batteries for EVs to be a success, because this show started with a 500-mile real-world Lucid using 2170 cells. What you would find, you know, their battery partners are SK and LG in a Model 3 or a Model Y, right, from Tesla. So it's not like Lucid aren't doing anything magical. It's tech that's out there. And so we're there already. But yes, there'll be huge rates of improvement. Now we'll talk about Apple's self-driving car next, Project Titan, as it's called. And Bloomberg's Mark Gurman, in his newsletter over the weekend, talking about how another major name has left the team. The head of software engineering and program management has left. Joe Bass was his name. Well, Joe Bass is his name. He's not dead, but he's gone to work at Facebook. Sorry, Meta. So, you know, a little piece of me just died. Apple is internally targeting a launch of its self-driving car in 4 years. But what will they do? Will it be an actual car? Will it just be the technology that will power other cars? Will they actually go for making bits of metal and making a whole car? Look, cars are really subjective, you know. Cars are very tribal, much more so than a piece of glass and metal that's a phone or a tablet. Most people can agree, yeah, that looks nice. Like, that's a pretty sleek-looking device. Cars, I don't know, look, but then again, the automotive market is much bigger. If Apple can tap into the automotive market, huge opportunity, huge growth to be had as well. And Apple's already a 40% plus margin business, I believe. And so, yeah, sure, they can do it, but I think it's a mistake. I think supply the tech, come with, you know, have the new Toyota powered by Apple. Like, that's great. It can be the motors, the inverters, but oh my goodness, like, how often does your phone go wrong? I don't know about you, but me, very rarely. Cars go wrong. Cars get dirty every week and you have to clean them. Cars break down. Even EVs have oily bits. Sorry to say it, but they do. You don't put petrol in them, but there's still plenty of oily bits in EVs. They're just, I don't know. That doesn't seem very Apple to me. It seems kind of like Apple 30 years ago when they're making terrible things like printers, because inkjet printers are a genuinely horrible experience. Like, we have a laser printer here in the office at EV News Daily because it just works. Inkjets for years, they're horrible. Like, and that was Apple, right? They're making scanners and printers, and those things break down, and Steve Jobs binned all those. I don't know if Steve would be making a car. Hey, I mean, goodness me, who am I to say that sentence? But I don't know. I think Apple making a car is a terrible idea. Stay away from that. Make the tech and the software and the controls and you know, have an Apple car that way, but license it to other people to actually, I don't know, the kind of, when your car goes back to the garage because it's broken down, it's just bad for Apple's reputation. It's, oh, the Apple car's broken down. All cars break down. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about Lamborghini, the Aventador. It will have a successor, and it will be a plug-in car. It'll have a V12 engine, which is less interesting to me. But rumours are swirling around that it's, particularly on the UK's Car magazine, who spoke to the Lamborghini chairman, CEO, Stefan Winkelmann. They said that the next car will be a plug-in hybrid, and the Urus will come in 2024. The Huracan will be a plug-in hybrid as well. And, of course, Lamborghini is all about, you know, drama and show, and electric doesn't really do that for Lamborghini. It'll be a, you know, a pure electric car would be better than anything they can make. I refer you to the Rimac Nevera. But it wouldn't really appeal to Lamborghini buyers. So, we'll wait and see. Next, we'll talk about how in Shanghai, the mayor of Shanghai wants more chip production for new energy vehicles. The mayor in Shanghai municipality, Gong Zheng, saying after the annual city legislature session yesterday that they need more chip fabrication. They'll offer incentives to require wafer fabrication plants to be built. It costs billions of dollars to do this and takes years, but Shanghai will offer generous incentives to attract talent and firms so that they can have more control over the chips that go in EVs. And that's your podcast for today. Well, it's your long version. What do you reckon about this idea of doing a short and a longy? Then I quite like the idea of two of them. And hey, as always, it's an experiment. I'm in beta with this. Well, let me know your feedback. And let me know your answers to question of the week this week with emobilitynorway.com. So Tom Malogny's Lucid Air 70-mile-an-hour range test was a real-world 500 miles. It raises the bar by a huge amount. But I've got to ask you this question. Do EVs ever need a range of 500 miles? Is that overkill? Email me your answer now. Hello at evnewsdaily.com. Thanks so much to all of our premium partners of the podcast. Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel, Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, and emobilitynorway.com. Have a good one tomorrow, and remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.